Good morning, good people. This is Kimplin Primus, your host for the local take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we're joined in the studio by Wayne Early, who is a member of the South DeKalb Improvement Association. And we're here today to talk about home ownership and home values. Wayne Early, welcome.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, as I mentioned to you, I was very excited to speak with you about how homes are valuated and why it seems that homes in majority African American or Latino communities are valued less than homes in more European communities. Homes that are in communities that are majority white are valued more. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about how homes get their value and who is actually coming up with this kind of construct of what a house is worth?
Okay, I'll be glad to. First of all, I think that we sometimes err in looking at issues as recent or as isolated issues. In fact, if you look historically, the policies of the federal government, the Federal Housing Administration, and the bank regulators has always been to promote segregation and to discourage home and business ownership by people of color, especially African Americans. The official policy of FHA starting in the 1920s. Before that, we were sharecroppers and we weren't allowed to own homes. But when we did start buying homes, we were not allowed to get government-backed loans. And there were official policies of redlining and segregating cities. So we're just living with the continuation of that policy. It wasn't until 1968 that the laws changed. But even though the laws, there were fair housing laws, fair lending laws passed, you know, old habits die hard, and I don't think they have ever died. So nowadays, after the crash, you know, most of the, all the policies that have been passed and the laws have been primarily to protect the banks, not to protect the customers or the homeowners or people like that. So most of the laws are there to make sure the banks don't lose money. So it allows them to determine the value of our properties. And the research that we've done and that a number of other organizations, including Georgia Tech and the Federal Reserve Bank, have concluded that there's a direct correlation to the racial composition of a community and how properties are valued. And they're always valued lower the more that a community is African-American or even Hispanic. So that is a nationwide practice, and it hasn't been remedied.
So how do we as citizens work to remedy that? Because some people could, listening to this, could say, well, it doesn't matter. You know, my home still has value and I love my home. But what that really translates into is generational wealth. One of the reasons that the majority community are Caucasians, white people in the community are able to pass along so much wealth is because their homes are going to increase in value significantly, almost no matter what. In our communities, we can't pass along that same kind of stabilization or wealth to our generations to come because our homes are valued lower, which means you can't get a second mortgage. You know, some people get second mortgages to start businesses. Some people take loan, you know, money out of their houses to do other things, pay for college, pay for someone's illness. sometimes we can't even do those things. So how do we get away from this? And if you said this is something that's been fought since the 20s, and I remember the Fair Housing Acts in the 70s, how do we get away from this, Mr. Early? How do we end this kind of construct that has held us back for generations?
Well, this is one reason that with the South DeKalb Improvement Association, we've been working to fight this this practice in our communities. South DeKalb is, at least a few years ago, was either the second or third richest black community in the nation. Prince George's County, I think, in Maryland was the most wealthy, and there was an article not long ago that said Prince George's County is suffering from the same undervaluation of their property. So we have, you know, talked to fair housing organizations. We've filed complaints with HUD and also with the Consumer Credit Protection Bureau. These organizations have not been set up, and they have not really enforced this aspect of fair housing. So we really are kind of pioneering new territory. And we were fortunate enough to contact the National Community Reinvestment Coalition. And they enforce the Community Reinvestment Act. And we are working with them. As a matter of fact, we're going to their national conference in a couple of weeks. And we are developing the research and the legal strategies to begin combating this. And I think the only way that it's really going to happen is when a big percentage of African-American property owners and homeowners begin complaining and filing complaints and protesting. And I'm not talking about marching in the streets. I'm talking about filing actual actions and forcing our elected officials to fairly and equally value our properties and enforce the laws that are already on the books. The one experience, I'm a real estate broker, and an experience that has happened over and over again in the last, well, since the crash, is that we will have a house that's for sale in a predominantly black community. There's no lack of demand. We get two or three, four offers on the house. The buyer that we select is willing to pay the listing price for the house. But when the appraiser comes in, they say, after they do their analysis, they say, this house is not worth that much. You have to cut your price $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 before the bank will approve the loan for this sale. And what it has done is made millions of African Americans unable to sell their houses, unable to refinance their houses. So they're stuck in their house. They have no equity, even though they may have been paying for 10 or 20 years in their house. So as you're saying, this is a loss of generational wealth. It's a loss of opportunities because the people want to relocate, want to downsize or upsize, or want to refinance, or even want to get rid of their mortgage insurance. They cannot do it because the banks and the appraisals say our houses are not worth what we paid for them.
I'm almost speechless because it seems almost ridiculous. Why would the banks, why would the county, why would the municipalities, why are they standing for this kind of situation when it not only means non-general wealth for the African-American homeowner, but it means no taxes collected for that county, that municipality. It means no way to get more amenities into that neighborhood or that municipality. For a country that likes money so much, it almost seems like that's one of those things cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Well, it is to a certain extent. However, that has always been the practice of our government and our commercial institutions, to depress the value of communities of color, even though it may cost more to the general economy. And, you know, in the past, well, what has happened recently after the crash, you know, with when our prices crashed, these giant investment funds came in and bought up hundreds of thousands of homes all across the country, primarily in black communities.
Whole tracts.
Right.
Sometimes whole blocks.
Right. And they have now turned those properties into rental properties. And they are getting, you know, big profits from charging very high rents. They have very high credit standards, and they have very high eviction rates. And they are making a lot of money off of that. As a matter of fact, just recently, and unfortunately, our former President Obama approved this, they have now securitized these corporate leases so that the government backs them up. So these companies don't have any motivation to sell these properties back to homeowners, because even if they fail, the government will bail them out. And so they're going to hold on to these properties, and it turns our communities into rental communities rather than home ownership communities.
And it further depresses the value of the homes that are owned.
That's true.
So we seem to be caught in this kind of crazy loop with no way to get the true value out of our investment.
Well, we believe that, you know, legal action is probably the ultimate result. There was a case, and I can't remember the name of the case. It was a Supreme Court case, I think, in 2015, out of Texas, that reaffirmed the concept of disparate impact, meaning that if a policy, even though it appears to be equal on its face, if it results in harm to one distinct group, then it can still be illegal and discriminatory, and that motivation and intent don't have to be proven. So you don't have to prove that the banks and the appraisers and the other people intend to discriminate. It's just if the impact of what they're doing causes harm to us, and then we can litigate these issues. And I think we need to start a groundswell and a tidal wave of litigation across the country, because every predominantly black community in the country is being affected by this. Another aspect of this, and you can see it here in Atlanta, with very few exceptions, if there's a predominantly black community, there is very little business investment also. So it's not until the area starts to be gentrified that then all the businesses and the shops and the cafes and things come in. When it's predominantly black, they won't loan money for business development. Outside investors don't come in and build businesses in our communities. So it's hard not to conclude that this whole process is intentional, and that is designed to separate people of color from land ownership and from business ownership.
And from the American dream, in all actuality.
That's the bottom line, yes.
So there was an article recently here in Atlanta about a group of bankers who took a bus ride to an African-American community, and they actually toured homes, and they were shocked. One of the bankers' response was about, you know, one of the kitchens was better than any kitchen he had seen in Dunwoody or Alpharetta. Who knew these kinds of homes were in this neighborhood? And sometimes I wonder if it's truly intent, or is it just ignorance?
Well, I don't think it's ignorance. An individual banker may not be aware of the different communities, but the big banks know who lives where and what the condition of those properties are. You know, South DeKalb is an example of that. South DeKalb has communities that you could place in Johns Creek or Sandy Springs or anywhere, and they would fit right in. People talk about, you know, maintaining your properties and trash and things. There are places in South DeKalb that are immaculate, beautiful homes, very big, stately homes.
Backing up to golf courses.
Right. And they are still priced at one half to maybe two thirds of the value of a home on the north side. And their prices are not going up like they are in the on the north side communities. So, you know, it's they can say they don't know that these communities are there, but as a real estate agent, I see them all the time, and I go all over the metro area, and I see that our communities are just as good as communities in other areas that have prices two or three times our value.
Now, Mr. Early, you've mentioned a couple of times about being a real estate broker, but you also have a background in economics. So would you share with our listeners how you actually came to start doing this research and this work?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I was fortunate enough and worked hard enough to get a master's in economics from Georgia State University. And I've always been interested in economic development for African-Americans and Africans worldwide. I always wondered, I was in the Marine Corps back in the 70s, and I traveled to probably 20 countries, and it struck me that wherever I went, the African descendants were always impoverished and did not control, even in countries where they were the majority. And so that's one thing that drove me to study economics. And of course, in economics, you know, you learn how to research and how to do statistical analysis and that sort of thing. So when I saw what was happening, I just started to, and I would hear people talk about the same things that you mentioned, you know, the bankers and other people say. So I started to look at the data to see if it supported what people were saying. And every time I would do some research, I found out what the common perception was not accurate. And so we continued. One big misperception is that crime is higher in African-American communities. We looked at an analysis of DeKalb County. Some of the highest crime rates are in areas like around the city of Decatur, up in Dunwoody, in Brookhaven. And the crime rates in South DeKalb are moderate compared to most of the rest of the county. So, and then, you know, there was the perception that our demand for our properties was low because nobody wanted to live in DeKalb County or South DeKalb. But in fact, in the last 10 years, South DeKalb has sold 3 to 5 times as many homes as the north side. So there are lots of people who want to buy homes in South DeKalb. And especially with the low prices, we're overwhelmed with buyers. But homeowners cannot sell because they cannot get an appraisal that will allow them to sell. The buyers would pay much higher prices than what we're allowed to sell for. So all this research just led me to conclude that we have to do something about this because it's not based on market forces, it's not based on traditional economic theory. If you put the theories to the data, they don't match up at all. So I was fortunate enough to become affiliated with the South DeKalb Improvement Association, and we have 5 different committees working on all different aspects like housing, education, economic development, public safety in our communities, trying to find solutions to these problems. And, you know, we have some very talented people, a lot of professionals and highly educated people in South DeKalb County. So we're working, you know, collectively, and I've expanded that to people in other counties, in Fulton County, You know, Clayton County has been hit very, very hard by the same thing. So we've been working on this for about 3 years now, but I feel like we're just getting started. And I believe we're going to make a lot of progress, because when we first started this, nobody really, I mean, they understood what we were saying, but nobody had ever really investigated this issue. Now people are starting to investigate the regulatory agencies. With the changes in Washington, who knows where they're going to go, but we still feel like the court system is there, and we believe that we can be successful working with the courts.
I just find it disconcerting that we have to do this much and go this far just to receive equity. I mean, it's just to get a fair judgment on the value of a home that's bought by an African-American and that's in a primarily African-American community. It seems that in the 21st century, we would be past this. Again, because it not only impacts the general wealth of African-Americans, but it so impacts the wealth and the ability of municipalities and counties to have the funding that they need. So for our listeners who are in South DeKalb or who are in primary African-American neighborhoods, what should they do? How can they join your efforts? And how do we come together to kind of address this so that in the 22nd century, our children aren't dealing with the same thing? Because redlining, you know, the Fair Housing Act, all of this was supposed to get rid of this kind of construct that continued to keep our homes valued lower. How do we kill this now so that we're not fighting this again in 2061?
Okay, well, I would invite people who feel that they may have been afflicted or affected by this to email me. My email address is wayne@earlyeconomics.com, which is W-A-Y-N-E at early, that's E-A-R-L-Y dash economics.com. Because working with the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, we are hoping to, and we are working to develop the statistical and legal basis for pursuing some of these issues in court. The more people that we have who have been harmed by this, I think the better that we will be able to pursue this. I can't give people a definite step forward right now because we're going to this national conference. We're going to, as a matter of fact, they're asking us to, me and my committee, to do a presentation to their national conference. And we're hoping that we can get some definite, a definite roadmap forward and how they can help us handle a large number of people or file class actions that can affect big numbers of people. But let me kind of jump back for a second. You know, when we talk about why are we dealing with this in the 21st century, there's an article, I think it was in the Atlantic magazine, called A Case for Reparations. And they cited, it's a fantastic article, I would say everybody should read it. Prior to the 1920s, they had what they called land contracts. And this is where white landowners primarily would sell to black buyers, but it was sort of like a lease purchase. You didn't get the deed, you just had to pay on it until you paid the full amount. And if you missed the payment, then they would snatch it back and sell it to somebody else. Now, in the 20s, when they started as part of the New Deal and all that sort of thing, or 20s and 30s, they started the Federal Housing Administration. But the FHA at that point had in law that communities had to be redlined, and they kept track of where the black communities were and where the mixed communities were. And they also had a thing called restrictive covenants in deeds, which on a property, it said you cannot sell this property to a black person or a Hispanic or something like that. And then, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm a real estate agent. The National Association of Realtors, up until 1950s, had in their codes that it was an ethical violation to sell a house to a person of a different race who might bring down property values. And if you did that, you could lose your real estate license. So, and then when they passed the fair housing laws, you know, I'm not saying they haven't done anything. They have helped in quite a few ways, but they never were designed to eliminate segregation. And I don't think they're really designed to promote property and home ownership by people of color. They were more designed to allow people who could afford, you know, to pay their way to have more opportunities to buy and rent properties. But if you couldn't afford it, there really wasn't much in there to help remedy that. And so you're talking about generational wealth that's been lost. You know, it's centuries of wealth that we have lost. And, you know, the answer for that, we have a lot of different opinions. I have my opinions. We're not here to talk about that. But I just don't think that we should be surprised that we're still dealing with this today.
Wayne Early, I just want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing this information with our listeners. You have a report here from Early Economics Appraisal and Home Valuation Discrimination Initial Findings. We're going to have a link to this on our website so folks can get more information. And I want to thank you, because I think what helps us not to have to fight this in the 22nd century is what you're doing right now. So thank you for the work that you're doing on our behalf.
Well, I appreciate this opportunity to come and spread the word, because that's really what's necessary. We really want to educate people on what's been happening and what are some possible solutions. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to The Local Take on WCLK this morning. Special thanks to our guests for taking their time to speak with us. You can find many of these interviews posted online for on-demand listening at WCLK.com. If you want to recommend a community leader or nonprofit organization you would like to see featured on The Local Take, you can leave a voicemail on the WCLK Community Engagement Line at 404-880-6211, or you can email me at kiplinprimus@gmail.com. Good morning.